So one of a couple things happened. Maybe the Fed knows of stresses that we don't. I'm not going to go down that road because that's conspiracy theory thinking, and I don't want to do that. Or more likely, just in an election year, I think Powell has got us locked in on the idea of potential cuts and does not want to take that optionality off the table. Because if he has to take it off the table, then put it back on the table, that's problematic in election year. It looks like he's leaning one way or the other. In this case, he gets to stick to that narrative.
You're listening to IBKR Podcasts. Find more conversations at IBKRpodcasts.com. Please remember, any trading discussions are for information purposes only and are not intended to portray recommendations. Please listen to further disclosures at the end of today's episode. Now, welcome to our show.
Welcome to this week's economic podcast from Interactive Brokers. Joining me to discuss U.S. economics this week, Steve Sosnick.
Hello, Andrew.
Our chief strategist and senior economist, Jose Torres. Welcome, Jose.
Thank you, Andrew. Great to be here.
Well, U.S. economy-wise, I'm going to say we're in a funny place caught between yet another robust employment report for March and then this week's Consumer Price Index report. So let's get your take on the non-farm payroll reading, Jose, and then we'll assess how the money market is responding to where it sees the Federal Reserve heading in 2024. So, Jose, go ahead, give us your rundown and behind-the-scenes look at the March jobs pick.
Sure. So headline growth was really strong, above 300,000. Most of the sectors added jobs. However, we did have a non-cyclical tilt once again with government, education, and health services comprising a large share of employment gains last month. Wage gains, very strong, 0.3%. Year over year, 4.1%. Still shows that the Fed is not there at their 2% inflation target if workers are getting 4.1% compensation increases year over year. We saw some benefits from immigration and labor force participation that increased, which is favorable dynamic on the disinflationary side. Overall, strong report. As far as what it means for the Fed has projected slower job growth at this point in the tightening cycle. And what this report did, and we'll be waiting to see what happens with CPI, but now we're incrementally delaying the Fed's first cut. As of right now, the odds for June are below 50% for a cut. So the favorite is for a move in July. If we continue to get hot data, if oil prices continue to increase, there's an expectation that that'll get delayed further. We're also seeing an interesting development at the Fed with some dissidents within some of the governors as well as some of the presidents, which are, some of them are saying, we're only going to cut once, fourth quarter. Some are saying we're not going to cut at all. So there is a little bit of a shifts in opinion across the governors, the chair, as well as the regional presidents.
So, Steve, you've been writing about this at length recently. Let's ask you that question directly. Why exactly do we need rate cuts?
On the surface, it's not clear that we do. I'd like some, Jose, either to agree or disagree in a minute. We think about it this way. The Fed has a dual mandate of stable prices and full employment. Well, we've checked the full employment box. We've been checking the full employment box for quite some time. And as Jose noted, we're actually so strong on employment still that it adds to the pressures on stable prices, which is the leg of the stool that still needs a lot of attention. There's sort of a third leg of the stool that isn't really mentioned, and that is stability and soundness of the financial system. But again, I see little out there that tells us that there's any troubles in that regard. So one of a couple things happened. Maybe the Fed knows of stresses that we don't. I'm not going to go down that road because that's conspiracy theory thinking, and I don't want to do that. Or more likely, just in an election year, I think Powell has got us locked in on the idea of potential cuts and does not want to take that optionality off the table. Because if he has to take it off the table, then put it back on the table, that's problematic in election year. It looks like he's leaning one way or the other. In this case, he gets to stick to that narrative. I find myself more in the camp of, let's say, Fed Presidents Bostic or Cook or Kashkari, who've sort of in the 0-1 camp. You can argue that we may want to do it because it keeps the Fed's credibility. So maybe we get a token rate cut. I actually think at some level it's also very effective, like a carrot in front of a donkey. I think I use that as a graphic in one of my Traders Insight pieces. So that's kind of my thinking. And I really like to hear Jose's opinion on this as well.
Last December, when Powell started talking about rate cuts, I thought that one of the big developments was the fact that he kind of took away the option for further rate hikes in the future, right? Pretty much declared victory super early. We've seen financial conditions loosen significantly. We're seeing that in the capital markets with equities near all-time highs. We're seeing it in credit spreads with high-yield borrowers being able to secure very favorable lending terms. We're seeing that in the economic data, which in aggregate is almost every data point is coming in stronger than expected, right? And I think it's a mistake. It's a mistake similar to what occurred back in 2021 when Chair Powell and his group continuously called inflation transitory and underestimated the threat of inflation. Today, Powell threw in the towel with inflation significantly above the Fed's target. Crew members on the ship are not really sure if this is the right policy. I don't think it is, Steve. I agree with you. I think I'm in the 0-1 camp. If employment is growing so fast above trend, right, what do we need rate cuts for? If inflation is continuously above trend, why do we need a rate reduction? During one of his recent presentations, why is he cheering prices growing 30 bips month over month, right? That's not 2% inflation. That's, if you annualize that, that's 3.6. You look at wages, that's 4.1. You look at CPI. By the way, we haven't seen a two handle yet. Since last June, we've only seen higher year-over-year CPI figures. And this is my final point here. Last year, much of the disinflationary trend had very little to do with the labor market at all. All of the disinflation that we got last year was driven by commodities and by goods. Services never cooperated at all. If you look at things like shelter as well as services spending that consumers like to enjoy, that inflationary trend has been well intact and hasn't dropped at all. Gasoline and goods are what got you that disinflationary trend last year. They're not cooperating this year, and that's why you see bond yields increasing significantly.
That is exactly the point I wanted to make. And you teed it up perfectly, Jose. One of the things that's been going on now is we've seen the energy markets not cooperating. I wrote last week about the double bottom in oil, so to speak. And you know, I don't want to take us down the technical analysis framework here. Just let's keep it to economics. But the Fed is so laser focused on core PCE, which excludes food and energy. But they're also focused on inflationary expectations. And I've frequently graphed levels of the one-year Michigan expectations survey and the price of gasoline at the pump. And it's like a 1 or 2 month lag. It's not a perfect correlation, but it's pretty good. And so, well, let me ask you the question as an economist, can you manage inflationary expectations if you're only looking at core when people, as they go about their daily lives, are so focused on the non-core items of food and energy, which make up so much of their routine spending?
No, absolutely not. It's when oil prices go up, it's not just consumer pain when they see the charges at the pump go higher. Within core PCE, Steve, you have airfares, right? And we all know that within airfares, crude oil prices are a huge determinant of where travel costs are going to go. Right, as well as apparel, as well as manufactured goods that are in the core PCE, right? A lot of those products and services alike use oil as an input. So no, it's you can't really manage expectations if oil prices are increasing sharply. And final point here, former Fed Chairman Bernanke suggested in the past that one of the hardest things to do within an economy is dealing with higher oil prices because it really makes it difficult on the central bank towards its price stability goals.
So, Steve, a lot of the economic strength we've seen recently has manifested itself in a rise in bond yields. I think we're getting a message from the money markets saying that maybe the Fed is going to do less. It's going to delay reducing monetary policy at some point. Should investors in the equity market specifically be concerned about that recent bump in bond yields?
Equity investors should always be paying attention to bond yields. The relationship is somewhat tenuous. You know, you should be paying attention not necessarily to the day in, day out, but to the longer term trends. On the other hand, we are up in terms of yields. We're up a significant amount year to date, and the stock market has managed to shrug it off. I think that's more of a testament to stock market momentum than it is to the economic realities that are being expressed. But one of those economic realities that's being expressed in higher yields is more confidence in the economy. That's good for stocks. Another element of that is less of a willingness of the Fed to fight inflationary pressures. That's bad for stocks. So that's why there's always a little bit of a push-pull. But if we start to see bond yields really accelerate, and we're not there yet, but I'm talking 10 years above 450, something like that, then we could be in for some trouble. I think that would really be my line in the sand that would maybe make investors notice.
Yeah, sure. So if I could add to that as well, much of the outperformance this year was driven by technology shares, right? And there's been a hope that the market would broaden out towards more cyclical areas, towards small caps. That long duration yields increasing that significantly, year to date, maybe roughly 60 bips or so. Right, that really pressures a lot of those rate sensitive areas within the cyclicality and small caps, right? So when the Fed is going higher, they're not cutting, that's one thing that really affects short-term borrowing and short-term rates. But when long-term rates start to go higher, we saw this back in October, which is very similar, Steve. We saw increasing oil prices and we saw the 10-year at 5%. You know, the market didn't do well in that environment.
One final thing is one area of the market that has broadened out is energy stocks were among the leaders for the last few months. And XLE, just to pick one benchmark for energy stocks, has outperformed SPX over the last few weeks. One of the early lessons I learned in the markets was always be a little bit nervous when energy stocks lead the way, because that means oil prices are rising, and that leads back into the whole discussion we had. And so that doesn't mean head for the hills, but that means get a little more cautious, and maybe the 16 VIX that we've been seeing is the market's way of telling us that.
And Steve, you wanted to note something about the money supply. The money supply is very important in the economy. Tell us about M2. What are you seeing there?
I'm seeing relatively nothing. I hadn't looked at M2 in a while. We kind of forgot about it. I've been really focused on the shrinkage of the Fed's balance sheet, which is in itself something they've been focusing on. They don't talk about it much. The quantitative tightening sort of gets a brief mention at every FOMC statement and press conference and then ignored. To be fair, risk assets have done quite well in spite of that. So I started to look at M2, and M2 has been pretty much flat. M2 typically rises more or less at the rate of the economy, probably a bit faster lately because just Fed policy has been such. Obviously, it zoomed, you know, in the post-COVID era, but it's just been dead flat. And on a year-over-year basis, we're starting to see it actually negative, which is never really a good sign. It's another one of those things that's sort of out there and, you know, in hindsight becomes more of an issue than it is day to day. But that is something I'm watching. Does M2 really make a difference right now? We could get down the rabbit hole of the velocity of money making up for the stagnation in M2 because the velocity had mysteriously been problematic, you know, even as M2 was rising for much of the last decade. But that's just something I'm putting on the radar. And again, while I have our economist here, I'm curious for his thoughts if that's something he would like to be keeping an eye on.
Absolutely, definitely keeping an eye on it. And in the short term, let me say medium term rather, from October to today, when the market hit its low around 4,100 on the SPX, you actually saw a little bit of an increase in the money supply. Part of that had to do with the Treasury prioritizing issuance towards bills and not really testing price discovery on duration, on notes or on bonds as much as they were last year. Part of that also has to do with the bank term funding program starting to decline now that it expired last month, and also reverse repo funding, which is at around $400 billion and, you know, continuously declining. those conditions point to M2 declining further in the coming months. However, we were also hearing from Powell and the group that they might begin to taper quantitative tightening. So that's also something to watch, because if they taper, then all of a sudden, you know, there's not as much downward pressure on M2, and then that's incrementally more favorable for risk assets.
Jose Torres and Steve Sosnick, thank you very much for joining me today. And please remember to rate our recent episodes wherever you download your podcasts from, and look out for more episodes at IBKR Podcasts.
Thanks for listening to IBKR Podcasts. As always, we have more episodes at IBKRpodcasts.com. And if you're interested in learning more about interactive brokers, visit IBKR.com. We offer more trading education material, such as webinars at IBKRwebinars.com, financial and economic commentary at TradersInsight.news, market-related courses at TradersAcademy.online, and quant-related articles at IBKRquant.com.
The analysis in this material is provided for information only and is not and should not be construed as an offer to sell or the solicitation of an offer to buy any security. To the extent that this material discusses general market activity, industry, or sector trends, or other broad-based economic or political conditions, it should not be construed as research or investment advice. To the extent that it includes references to specific securities, commodities, currencies, or other instruments, those references do not constitute a recommendation by IBKR to buy, sell, or hold such investments. This material does not and is not intended to take into account the particular financial conditions, investment objectives, or requirements of individual customers. Before acting on this material, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances, and, as necessary, seek professional advice. Futures are not suitable for all investors. The amount you may lose may be greater than your initial investment. Before trading futures, please read the CFTC risk disclosure. A copy and additional information are available at ibkr.com. Any discussion or mention of an ETF is not to be construed as recommendation, promotion, or solicitation. All investors should review and consider associated investment risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company or fund prior to investing. Before acting on this material, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances, and, as necessary, seek professional advice.